What is up, Mission? Thank you so much for letting us hang out today. My name is Jake, and I get to lead Mission City Church in Santa Barbara. Just a few short minutes up the 101, one of the most beautiful drives in all the country. I got to do that this morning, so thank you for giving me an excuse to make that drive. So glad to be together. We are a three-year-old church plant up in Santa Barbara, and many of you were around as before we launched, we were hanging out here and we were learning and studying and preparing. And if you're doing some quick mental math on what 3 years of church has looked like, that means that half of our life as a church has been under the COVID cloud, which is pretty wild. So we got a year and a half in and then the world shut down and we had to figure out how to do life just like you had to figure it out, just like Mission had to figure it out. And so we did 6 months online and then we remembered we live in Santa Barbara. We can be outside. And so we started doing an outdoor service, and for 10 months straight, we have met on top of a parking garage on City College's campus, all right? Now, our favorite part of the parking garage is getting to hang out with our people. Our least favorite part of the parking garage is that the portable restroom that we have to use is on one side of the lot, but the truck can't get there to clean it out every week. So part of our weekly task is pushing a portable restroom from one side of a parking lot to another. And I get to tell you that this Sunday, like right now, is our last outdoor service. We are going inside next week, and I no longer have to push a portable restroom, all right? That's really what this is about. Very, very excited about it. But man, it has been such a wild journey to watch God move and watch God make a difference in people's lives. And I'm just here to tell you as a personal testimony that God does not need walls and he does not need a roof to change people's lives. We've seen it. There have been people that have come to meet Jesus for the very first time, learn what it means to be a part of a church, serve for the very first time, be baptized in a horse trough on top of a parking garage, and we did it all without Wi-Fi, all right? You can't do anything without Wi-Fi. We had church without Wi-Fi for 10 months, and it happened. And so, so grateful. Now, here's what you need to know, is that none of this happens without people like you. Your generosity and your encouragement and your prayer toward these new churches makes all the difference in the world. And I have a guess that being in a big place like this, sometimes it can feel like I'm not sure that I can really make that much of a difference. Like, it's big and there's a lot of people, and what can I really do? And I'm here as a recipient of your generosity and a recipient of your prayer. I'm telling you, it makes the world of a difference. So thank you for being who you are, because you empower so many churches up and down the coast to continue giving hope for everyone. Thanks for being you, Mission. All right? Hey, absolutely. We can celebrate that. Today, I get to contribute to your series called Crazy Faith. And when the word faith comes up, that means a whole lot of different things to a whole lot of different people. Like maybe crazy is actually the perfect word for you because you think it's absolutely insane that anyone would have faith. Like you walk into a place like this and people are singing songs and they're raising their hands and they're volunteering. You're like, that's insane. Why would anyone believe in something that they can't see? But you're here and you're asking questions. Maybe you're curious, or maybe you're just here for the cute girl that you're sitting next to. Whatever your reason is, I think you're here for a reason. It is not an accident. Others of you, when you think about the word faith, it might be your fuel. Like it's the thing that keeps you going. In the last year and a half without your faith, you don't know where you would be. It's the thing that gets you out of bed in the morning. It's the thing that helps you put one foot in front of the other. You can't imagine a life without faith. Or maybe your faith is brand new. Like, I don't know if you heard this, there were 46 people that got baptized. And I know that if you've been around Mission for a long time, absolutely, let's clap for that. I don't know, if you've been around Mission for a long time, that might just seem like another day in the office. Like, yeah, of course, it's kind of what we do. I'm here to tell you that's insanity, all right? 46 people getting baptized at all is insane. 46 people getting baptized in July is absolutely insane. Most churches just don't even count on a spiritual decision in the month of July. You guys baptized 46 people, all right? That's insane. That's insane. But maybe you're like, all right, I'm getting baptized, and I'm in this moment, and now I'm wet, and now I'm dry, and it kind of feels like I'm the same person. Like I still got the same problems, and I still got the same relationships, and this is all brand new to you, and you're trying to figure out how to navigate it. Well, today, I want to read from you this passage from Hebrews, where the author describes what faith really does in our lives. It says this: faith shows the reality of what we hope for. It's the evidence of things we cannot see. Through their faith, the people in the days of old earned a good reputation. By faith, we understand that the entire universe was formed at God's command, that what we now see did not come from anything that can be seen. The author of Hebrews is saying faith is the great clarifier of life. It is the thing that will help you see clearly who God is, maybe for the very first time. Not only that, but you'll see who you are for the very first time. You'll see the world for all it is for the very first time. It's when we engage in faith that we can finally see clearly all the things around us. Today, we're going to talk about what would it be possible if we had a daily faith. A daily faith. Now, some of you, maybe you grew up and you were raised in an annual faith. Right? Your parents, every once in a while, right around Easter or right around Christmas, they made you put on these really uncomfortable clothes and they said, we're going to go do that thing that we do once a year and we're going to show up. And it was always like a holiday thing. It was a tradition thing. In the Christmas world, we have a word for those people. They're called creasters, right? Christmas and Easter creasters, right? That's when they show up. And that's great. And that's a great start. But what would it look like to move from an annual faith? And maybe some of you, you have like a weekly faith. You show up to a place like this once a week on a Sunday, and this feels great, and you feel encouraged, and you love it. But then there's these other 6 days a week that feel totally disconnected. Like all the experience that you get to have right here and right now, it feels totally devoid during your normal life. So what if we could move from an annual tradition-based faith from a weekly, just once a day faith, to a daily faith, like every single day, what you believe about Jesus would change you. So if we're going to do that, we need to start with a few truths. And the first one goes like this, okay? Following Jesus will change you, okay? Following Jesus will change you. It would be impossible for you to follow Jesus and not experience some real life change. There's all kinds of life experiences that we have that change the way that we see the world. Maybe you recently graduated high school or college and you have a job and you have a career. Well, that changes the way that you see everything. Sunday night is no longer the best night to hang out late with friends. Like you got to wake up in the morning. You got to go to job. You got to go to work. Your paycheck is no longer spent on whatever you want. You've got bills. And all of a sudden, your parents, who were absolute idiots like 5 years ago, all of a sudden got a lot smarter when you needed some advice, right? It changes the way that you see everything. Parenting changes the way you see everything. Your world shrinks from the distance between the baby's room and your couch for a long season of time. That's all you'll ever see. Christmas becomes an opportunity to make a kid's dreams come true. And all of a sudden, all those movies that you were watching without any filter whatsoever, all of a sudden you realize this is wildly inappropriate. All right, we should not be watching this around the kids. It changes the way you see everything. The ultimate experience is following Jesus. Following Jesus will change you from the inside out. So for instance, following Jesus will change your mind. It will change the way that you think. Following Jesus will absolutely challenge what you already thought about the world. Because here's the newsbreaker. You are wrong about some things. I am wrong about some things. And God is going to confront those on a regular basis, and he's going to change the way you think. So it is impossible to begin following Jesus and continue thinking exactly what you already thought. He's going to change it. In fact, if all God ever does is affirm what you already thought about the world, guess what? You're not following God, you're following yourself. He's going to change your mind. Following Jesus will change your relationships. It would be impossible to begin following Jesus and maintain the exact same relationships. For some of you, you're going to draw boundaries around relationships that you had in the past because they led you to decisions that you don't want to make anymore. Others of you, you're going to start speaking truth to the people that you love and helping them see their lives for what it really is. But again, it would be impossible to start following Jesus and have the exact same relationships. Following Jesus will change the way you treat people on the margins. The people that society has cast aside, the people that get pushed away as if they don't have any value. God has an undeniable heart for the people on the margins. And the end result of following Jesus is always more compassion, not less. And so if you don't see your heart growing in compassion for those people yet, just know that it's coming. It will. Following Jesus will change you in all kinds of ways. And what we're describing here is this term called spiritual formation. Right? Spiritual formation. God is going to meet you where you are, but he's not going to leave you there. He's going to change you. He's going to form his character in us. And in 2 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul just describes it so helpfully. He says, this is the way the new life is going to be. He says, but whenever someone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away, for the Lord is the Spirit. And where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. So all of us who have had that veil removed can see and reflect the glory of the Lord. And the Lord who is the Spirit makes us more and more like him as we are changed into his glorious image. My daughter is 12. And when she was around 4, we were having this issue where she couldn't follow basic instructions. So she would have toys out in her room and we would say, okay, it's time to clean them up. And it would take her forever, and then she would miss some toys, and we thought, why Jesus? All right, why us? Like, why did we get a child like this? And then one day, we took her into the optometrist, and that eye doctor looked at me and said, your daughter's eyesight is so bad, it is a medical condition. She is blind as a bat. And so she put on her glasses and looked at me, presumably seeing me for the very first time, and I said, my bad, all right, my bad. I didn't realize, like, dad of the year over here, we were getting mad at you because you wouldn't pick up the toys. You could not see them, all right? That was her condition. And once she got the glasses, now she can see the world for what it really is. What Paul says is that living in the old way of life is almost like just living with blurred vision. You've got this veil over your eyes to where you can kind of see the things in front of you. You can kind of understand who Jesus is. You can kind of understand the things that are going on in your heart, but you can't see it clearly until God comes and removes the veil. And then what did he say the end result is? He said, it's freedom. It's freedom. When you finally get to understand who Jesus is and finally understand who you are, it is the most liberating thing you'll ever experience. You get to see God for who he really is, not all the rumors that you've heard. And then God's going to show you who you really are. Like, when you look in the mirror, he's going to be honest, and he's going to say, hey, it's worse than you thought, right? There's a lot going on here, but you're far more loved than you could ever dream. He's going to be honest. And then not only that, do we get to see God clearly and ourselves clearly, but we get to see the world clearly. And all the striving and all the achieving and all the accumulation that we see our friends and our coworkers and our families doing, we can see it for what it is. It's just going to let us down. It's going to disappear someday. And it's not a life worth building. So we can totally see the world for what it really is. But here's the news that we have to embrace today. If we're going to have a daily faith, spiritual formation is a process, not an event. Spiritual formation, growing to look more and more like God, is a process, not an event. You can decide to follow Jesus in a moment. You can get baptized in a moment. But if you want to grow to look more and more like Jesus, it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of training. How many of you, just show of hands, how many of you are locked into the Summer Olympics right now? Anybody enjoying the Summer Olympics right now? Okay, very good, very good. Anybody here become an expert in a sport you didn't know existed 2 weeks ago? All right, anybody had that experience? Yeah, absolutely. So you're sitting on your couch and you're drinking your Coke and eating your Cheetos, watching world-class athletes and been saying, ooh, that wasn't good. All right, that was not it. That wasn't great. That person that put their life on the line on that high dive, not awesome. All right. That person doing the weird trot with the horse that I totally don't understand, she could have done better. All right. We get to this position to where we're just judging these world-class athletes on their performance. Now, it would be impossible for any of us to watch those events and think that person probably just showed up in Tokyo and is just trying really hard. In fact, one of my favorite ideas that's floating around social media right now is that they ought to find just a normal person to put in every event as a frame of reference, right? Like, fill the 7 lanes with world-class athletes, and then in the 8th lane, here comes Diane, a third-grade teacher from Nebraska. She hasn't broken a sweat in 10 years, and she's going to swim the 400-meter butterfly, all right? That would be helpful. That would be helpful to show us what these other 7 people have done their entire lives. These people train for years so that they can excel at the exact moment when the Olympics are on. It is an amazing dedication that they have. Maybe you saw the news story of Hidalyn Diaz. She won the first gold medal that the Philippines had won in over 100 years. 100 years. She won the gold medal in the 55-kilogram category of women's weightlifting. An incredible feat. Now, her training, her whole training process was hit by COVID. They had to isolate, they had to quarantine before they could go to their qualifying event in Peru, and she was left without the world-class training equipment and facilities that she needed. And so instead of mailing it in, what she did is she decided to do what she could to keep training. She took a piece of bamboo and water jugs and put them on either side and was dedicated to practicing. She was going to do her squats, she was going to do her lifts, however it took, and she just had what she had at the house. Now, here's my question for you. You have sticks, you have water jugs, why aren't you in the Olympics, all right? That's what she did. But she understood that she couldn't just show up in Tokyo and try really hard. It was going to take months and months of training. And friends, what I want to tell you is hopefully good news to you, is that the Christian life, spiritual formation, looking more and more like Jesus, is way more about training than it is trying. I hope that's really good news for you because it hopefully will allow you to give yourself grace. I don't know about you. Usually I'm wired to where I'm actually way easier on other people than I am on myself. Anyone else? Anyone else their own worst critic? Anyone else have like that negative self-talk that goes on in their heads? And sometimes what happens is I'm like, I should be there by now. You ever told yourself that? I should have this figured out. I shouldn't have done that again. And really what I'm in is this process of training. In fact, it's training versus trying is the Christian life. Have you ever tried really, really hard to act like Jesus in a moment? Just like your own willpower, your own effort? Like maybe you just tried to be patient. Like you showed up at the grocery and you had 9 items and you didn't even get a basket. You just got the stuff in your arms, right? And you get to the express lane and the person in front of you clearly has 17 items. Do you know how easy it is to count to 10? My kids can do it, all right? Everybody can count to 10, and that person chose not to count to 10. And they're in front of you, and you're behind them, and if you're holding 9 things, and they have 17 things, and you just try really hard to be patient, what happens? You're angry. Yeah, you're angry. You're losing it. You ever tried really hard to be generous, like in the moment? Maybe you were walking the streets and there was someone that was asking for resources and asking for help, and your initial flinch reaction was actually to do something. But then there was that voice in your head where you've spent all month long looking at your bank account and looking at your bills and realizing how little you have and how you're afraid there's not going to be enough, and that voice talked you out of being generous. You couldn't try hard enough. You ever tried really hard to be truthful? Even though it would be more advantageous to you to maybe tell a little bit of a lie. Like it would get you out of an awkward conversation with a friend, and so you told him a half-truth. It would get you a leg up at work, and so you kind of skirted around it a little bit. Trying really hard will always let us down, and then what we'll start to believe is that we can't do this. And it'll never happen for us. And you might even be tempted to quit. Friends, what I want to tell you is that you are in a training process. That if you are a follower of Jesus, you are in a training regimen where over time and over practice, you're going to have opportunities to grow in your faith. Now, often when we talk about believing in God or faith or all these big ideas, we usually highlight the big moments. Like the moment that I decided that I was all in, the moment that I got baptized, a powerful night of prayer, a moment of impact with someone. And we highlight these really, really amazing stories. But what I want to tell you is that often the most spiritual growth does not happen in the big moments. It's in the small daily opportunities that God gives us to grow. It's not always these mountaintop experiences that make for great Facebook posts. It's usually the normal stuff that God gives us an opportunity to grow. So as we wrap up today, I want to equip you. I want to give you some tools that if you want to grow, if you want to have a daily faith, here are some tools that I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you three different prayers that you could pray every single day. All right, three simple prayers. I'm going to give you three of them. We're going to treat it like in and out. You choose one, all right? Three options. You got one of them. You're going to take one of them. I know you need one of these. But there is a disclaimer to these prayers, all right? I got to warn you. God will answer these prayers. Just as a warning, I'm telling you, like, I guarantee God will answer your prayer. If you pray one of these, I guarantee it. Now, that sounds like some kind of like crazy person, like, how can you guarantee things? Because I've prayed before and it didn't happen, right? And most likely, if you're anything like me, I do this all the time, I pray for very specific outcomes. God, will you make this very specific thing happen with this very specific person at this very specific place at this very specific time? Please and thank you, right? That's what I need. And often what God is asking me is like, okay, it's not wrong to pray for specific things, but so often he just wants me to say, hey, God, I want to be more like you, like more and more. God, I want my heart to be like yours. I want to pray for the things that you want me to pray for. I want to become the person that you are trying to form me into. And so these are spiritual formation prayers. You could choose one of them, and I promise you that God will answer them, but that is a warning. Just watch out, all right? Ready? First prayer goes like this. If you want to pray and have a daily faith, you could pray this every single day. It goes like this. God, search me. God, search me. Some of you are like, nope, I'm out. That's not mine. I'm not doing that. Nope, I'm afraid of what he will find, all right? God, search me. This comes straight from Psalm 139. The author, David, he put it like this. He said, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you and lead me along the path of everlasting life. David was looking at God and he was saying, you've got full access. I'm giving you the keys. You can shine the lights in all the places that I've tried to keep dark. You can see all the things that I've been hiding. God, search me. One of the joys of being married is you get to learn that other people do the most mundane tasks completely different than you, and you're wrong. All right, that's what marriage is really about. And so my wife and I, we have these conversations about what does it mean to clean the house? What does it mean to clean the house? Like, what? Define clean, okay? Define clean. And I am more of, on a daily basis, declutter. I don't like clutter. I don't like stuff in the way. And so what I will do is I'll take the stuff in the middle of the room, and I will organize it on the edges of the room so that you can walk through without stepping on a Lego or tripping over something. And then I can sit down and enjoy peace. And she says, that's not clean, all right? That's decluttered. That's not clean. She will occasionally, I'm married a germaphobe, she will occasionally do like this deep dive and really, really clean it. I just kind of declutter it. I push it to the sides. And my guess is that some of us here, that means all of us here, have kind of done that with our lives. You didn't clean it. You didn't allow God access. You didn't let him see all the dark stuff. You just kind of pushed it to the side to where you could walk around it. You didn't have to see it anymore because it's over in the corners and it's over on the edge of the wall and like that relationship. You didn't end it. You just kind of pushed it over here. And that addiction, you didn't like go to therapy for it. You just tried really, really hard. And that really deep negative self-talk that keeps, you didn't get help for that. You just kind of pushed it over into the corner hoping no one would see it anymore. And David says, this is a very different prayer. This is, God, if there is anything that offends you, pluck it out. God, search me because I trust you. The only way that you would ever give anyone that level of access into your life is if you trusted their heart. And what God says is that he's our father. He's our perfect dad. And when he finds that thing, he's going to lovingly remove it because he cares about us.
And he wants us to be healthy. God, search me. Second prayer goes like this. God, stretch me. God, stretch me. Give me an opportunity today to grow in the area in which you want me to grow. God, stretch me. Give me a growing opportunity. So maybe you'll say, God, stretch me in my patience. And then you will find yourself in traffic. Right? You'll find yourself in traffic. Specifically, you'll be driving up the 101 North right at the Johnson Drive exit. And for some reason, everybody's going to stop driving for a minute and then start driving for a minute without any explanation. All right. Has anyone here, if you could just find me after service and explain that to me, that would be really, really helpful. But you can get mad. All right. You can get angry. You can start cussing out the Department of Transportation. You can do whatever you want. Or you can look at God and say, God, are you slowing me down for something? You trying to get my attention? Is there someone you want me to reach out to? Is there something you're trying to say? God, I will take this interruption in my day as a gift, not a frustration. Maybe you'll ask God, stretch me in my generosity. Stretch me in my way I give my resources. Stretch me with my time. And you already heard opportunities. Becky's up here telling you that you have the opportunity every single week to invest in kids. And God's saying, hey, I'm trying to stretch you. I know it's outside your comfort zone, but they need you. And not only do they need you, you have gifts that this church needs. God, stretch me. Make me grow. And then the final one goes like this. God, lead me. God, lead me. This is a prayer that presumes that God knows where he's going better than you do. Just for a second, give it a consideration. God maybe has a destination for you that you wouldn't choose on your own. But he wants you there. He wants you there because it's going to grow you, and he wants you there because you're going to make a difference, and he wants you there because that's the only place that he can use you to the utmost of your ability. Man, Jen mentioned that our family was in the Midwest, and we had this awesome church we were a part of, and it was big, and I got to have a pretty comfortable life, and then we moved. We moved to this place where we knew very few people and wanted to start a work of God, and I'm just telling you, God would not have done in my heart what he has, because we said yes. We said, God, lead us, and he did. And he led us across the country, and he led us to beautiful weather, and he led us to the beach, and we're grateful for that, all right? It wasn't like Buffalo. It could have been Buffalo. It's Santa Barbara. It's amazing. But man, I'm telling you, there is nothing more humbling than trying to figure out church in a parking garage and figuring out, like, maybe this is true about you. God has shown me that sometimes I do the right things for the wrong reason, and that makes it wrong. You ever done that? It's weird. And if I just stayed in comfort, and if I just stayed in the cushion, if I just stayed in what I understood, he never would have been able to show me that. I don't know what it is for you, but I got a feeling that God wants to take you somewhere so that he can show you who you are, and he can grow you in a way that he never would have had you just stayed in the confines of comfort. So you got three choices. Choose one. God's going to answer it. God, search me. God, stretch me. God, lead me. I want to pray for you as you make this decision, because it's a big one. And this week, I promise you're going to see God work. Will you pray with me? God, we are grateful that you are who you say you are, and that you promise to take care of us. And even if that means discomfort, and even if that means fear, we know that you are forming us into the men and women you've called us to be. And we wouldn't be willing to pray these prayers, we wouldn't have the courage to do it, we wouldn't have the confidence to do it, if you hadn't already been so good to us. God, I know we forget that, and I know that we ignore those moments, and we just live in fear and worry and scarcity. God, I pray. I think there's somebody here today that knows which prayer they need to pray and probably already knows what you're going to say. God, give them the courage to step out and watch you do your thing. It's in your son's good name I pray. Amen.